Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody? Sam Franco and Chris Brame back with another edition of the Crossover Podcast. It's right here on 960theref.com. You can also catch us on iTunes. If you leave a five-star review, rate and review, we greatly appreciate that. That helps us out in the iTunes store, marketplace, whatever you want to call it. So if you would do that, we'd greatly appreciate it. But we got plenty to get to on today's edition of the Crossover. We'll talk a little Georgia football, getting ready for homecoming. We'll talk some Alabama, really just some comments from Nick Saban that make this guy continue to seem like he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth at all times. We'll briefly hit on the Falcons and how just injuries continue to ravage that team, despite the fact that Matt Ryan is back to putting up MVP-level numbers. Nobody else is, other than anybody on offense. I mean, the offense is fine. The defense is not. So we'll talk about that. And the Braves, back in the playoffs for the first time since 2013, and they'll be playing. We're recording this episode on Thursday, and tonight's game one of the postseason. They're playing on the five-year anniversary of their last postseason win, and it was against the Dodgers.
Oh, so there you go. Maybe the Fultonevich on the mound tonight. The Dodgers have pushed Kershaw back to game two, so
yeah.
By the time you're listening to this, there'll be a result.
Yeah, it'll either be 1-0 or 0-1 for the Braves. We'll kind of hit on them, just more big picture of what it means for them to be back in the playoffs and kind of feeling like this is a little bit of playing with house money, because I don't think anybody really expected Atlanta before the season to be in this position. So we'll get to that at the end. But first and foremost, Georgia takes care of business against Tennessee. It wasn't always pretty, and now they've got to focus on Vanderbilt. It's so funny to me because it seems like in the games where Georgia hasn't looked as crisp as maybe they would have wanted to, I'm looking at the Missouri and Tennessee games, you know, Tennessee's one thing, and they have lost all three of their games that they've lost this year is by 26 points, which it kind of seems like Jeremy Pruitt and that staff knows the limitations of their team, and so they really just try to keep everything in front of them as opposed to, you know, going out there and trying to do too many risky things that would cause them to lose even worse.
Well, I think for Tennessee, too, after they had turned it over six times against Florida, they just wanted to see a cleaner effort against Georgia. Mm-hmm. And they were still sloppy. I mean, they made some mistakes, but the Dogs got lucky,
yeah.
Especially on the Nauta touchdown, where he just scoops up that fumble. Should have been a sack.
Well, he whiffed on the block, too,
yeah.
So he was able to make up for it immediately.
But, you know, I like that while Georgia's working out kinks early on in the season with its team, you know, they're winning games by 26 points over Tennessee and by 14 points on the road against Missouri. So, you know, I guess the Dogs have definitely arrived when, you know, after beating Tennessee 38-12, you do feel. And I mean, I'll admit, I mean, I did too. I'm not knocking on anyone that that felt that way. But yeah, I mean, watching that game, I was, you know, underwhelmed at times, but, you know, in the end, you got to sit back and realize, like, you know, oh my gosh, I mean, we just beat Tennessee by 26 points.
Right,
so.
And it was a 41-0 in Neyland like it was last season, so
right.
I think a lot of people were just kind of upset at the way Georgia's playing. But here's the thing. Georgia, this year, I feel like so many people just kind of forget about this because we keep talking about how well Georgia's done in recruiting and everything. Georgia is trying to replace players, two of which went over 100 yards rushing and each scored this past weekend in the NFL. And Nick Chubb, by the way, went over 100 yards on three carries. And then you have Roquan Smith, whose first play in the NFL was a sack. So, I mean, you're trying to replace a lot of talent. John Atkins, another guy that's proven to be very hard to replace on that defensive line. So, look, Georgia has a lot of talent. I'm not saying that they don't. That's not what I'm saying at all. But at the same time, it's not you know, snapping your fingers and replacing guys. You're still having to get them used to having the workload that you're putting on them now because you had guys doing it last year.
Right. I mean, those three guys that you mentioned are, I mean, they just weren't great players. They're three of the best players in the history of the school.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no matter how well you've recruited, you're not just going to immediately be able to fill those shoes. And I think when you look at the seven times that Fromm has been sacked and the couple times that he got sacked by Tennessee, those have been, like, you know, the third and long and third and medium situations where last year, I mean, Georgia wasn't afraid to run the ball in those spots. And I think defense has had to be prepared for the possibility that, yeah, even though Georgia's sitting here third and 10 right now, they could hand it off to Chubb or Michelle and still have a pretty good chance of picking up the first down. But, you know, right now with the running game, our backs are good, but they're not Chubb and Michelle. And I don't think opposing defenses are as afraid of those guys. And when Georgia gets into a more obvious passing situation this year, it is an obvious passing situation. And I think teams, you know, have been able to find some success a couple times of being able to get to Fromm and sack him.
Exactly. So I think overall, this team is still a work in progress. They're a very talented team, one of the most talented teams in the nation. But just to assume that everything was going to be the exact same as it was last season just seems like a fool's errand to me. And look, Georgia hasn't lost a game yet, but you wouldn't really be able to tell based on the comments and the kind of the temperature of some of the fan base.
Yeah, and I think it's a symptom of the playoffization of college football.
Of
and again, I'll admit that I'm guilty of this too. The last couple games I've watched, the Missouri game and the Tennessee game, you know, I've sat there and part of my evaluation of Georgia's performance is I keep asking myself, would this team beat Alabama? And the answer to that right now is no.
But you know what else the answer to that question is? Nobody. Not one team in the country you can ask that question and say confidently that they would beat
right.
Alabama.
And also the good news is Georgia doesn't have to play Alabama right now. Hopefully that'll be in December. Kentucky's good, though. Kentucky is legit.
They're a good football team. No question.
Yeah, I'm buying into them. They're not a fluke or a fraud at this point, but still, Georgia should get to the SEC championship game. And so it's in December when we'd have to cross that bridge of having to play Alabama. And, you know, but in the meantime, you know, I guess that's the problem now of, like, the playoff and everything is you just think that big picture. And, yeah, I mean, it's sometimes you don't necessarily enjoy the fact that, I mean, we just beat Tennessee 38-12.
Right.
Tennessee.
And you go back, like, you know, 10 years ago if that happened. You're doing jumping jacks and cartwheels in the middle of the street.
Right. I mean, 2 years ago, we lost to them at home on a Hail Mary.
It's so funny how you take these things for granted. If you went up to any Georgia fan who's been a Georgia fan since the 90s and remembers all that, do you remember how many times Georgia beat Tennessee in the 90s? Zero.
Georgia lost nine straight to them. Yeah.
Zero
nine
times.
Straight. Right.
So that's the thing. It's like Georgia went through a long spell against that program, and I realize that this is a very, very different team than what Tennessee was throwing out there in the 90s. But still, you take these things for granted. I've said this before. I'm not trying to be a Georgia apologist here, but what I'm doing is saying, look, Missouri, they've got good skill position players. They've got a NFL-level quarterback. Tennessee, they're not very good, but it's still a rivalry game, and you still beat them by 26 points. That's not a close football game. So,
no, I mean, at no point was Georgia in danger of losing that game to them.
Right.
None. I mean, that's the thing. It never did I feel like, boy, Georgia could lose this game. But, you know, I guess I don't know what was it just because, you know, the Dogs didn't immediately just go and run away and hide from them. It was 17-0 at the half, and they had like 68 yards of total offense.
Right.
I mean, it was one-sided, but I mean, maybe if it was 24-0, it would have felt better, but... You know, yeah, I mean, as the days go on and, you know, you start to think about it, it's like, yeah, I mean, Georgia's in a good place. It's not to say that there aren't some spots where the Dogs definitely need to improve. But, again, while they're working all that stuff out, they're winning easily. They should have no problem beating Vanderbilt this Saturday. And then next week, Georgia goes to LSU and we can finally have some fun again of, like, you know, knocking down a game and, you know, and kind of picking it apart. Because these last 2 weeks, it's just, but Georgia's not losing. They weren't going to lose last week to Tennessee, and they're not losing Saturday to Vandy.
Especially since the last Georgia loss to Vandy happened at home a couple years ago during homecoming.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm sure Kirby will drill that into his players' head that we're not letting that happen again. And I think Georgia is going to come out and take care of it. This is what I think about Georgia this weekend. I think Georgia is going to stomp Vanderbilt. I think that, you know, Kirby has probably been drilling it into the team all week. It's like, we got to start playing more fluid. Got to start being more consistent on offense with execution and things like that. And this Vanderbilt team has certainly had their ups and downs. They went to Notre Dame and had a really good performance for them. Although I'll say this, if Notre Dame had made the quarterback switch before the Vandy game, Notre Dame probably wins by a lot more.
By a healthier margin.
They've been a lot better since switching to Book at quarterback over Wimbush.
Yeah.
So,
it is weird, like Vandy's season, the way it's progressed now, because their first two wins, granted, they beat Middle Tennessee State and they beat Nevada, mm-hmm. but they were blowouts,
mm-hmm.
Which for Vandy, I think, is good. That's impressive. Yeah. And then they go and they've got the ball late against Notre Dame with a real shot to pull that upset. And then the last 2 weeks, they've gotten blown out at home by South Carolina. And would they beat Tennessee State by 31-27?
Yeah, I mean, that was a really close game for them. So things are never as good as they seem, and things are never as bad as they seem. That's kind of what it feels like for Vanderbilt. It's like after the first two games, like, man, this Vanderbilt team might be good. And then, they come back down.
So it's hard to figure out, you know, like what version of Vandy are we going to see Saturday, the version from the first three games or the one from the last two games. But, you know, the bigger point is just what version of Georgia we're going to see. And I agree with you. I'm kind of smelling like this will be a week where Georgia, because even when you look at the point spread, last week that number was way too high. 31.5.
Yeah.
And the Dogs were never even came close to covering that number.
And we've been at 26.5 all week.
Yeah. This week, I feel like that's where this game should be. And I kind of I like Georgia to cover Saturday.
Yeah, I'd say something like, I don't know, 49-13, something like that. That kind of feels like what it would be.
Right. And that's where we are. Like we've I've started dubbing them acceptable score games. Mm-hmm. Where there's no question about who's going to win the game, it just becomes a matter of like, all right, well, what's the score that you need to see that'll make you feel good about the performance for Georgia? So, what is it this week? What you said, 48, that?
I'll just say this.
What if it was 38-13?
I know this isn't a cover. Beat the team by three scores. Like, beat them by 20 or 21.
What do you mean, 9
fine.
Points?
No, that's no, no. I meant 3 touchdowns. So if they win by 21 or more, I'm fine.
Okay.
And it also depends. There's different circumstances in the game. What if somebody gets hurt? So it's kind of hard to kind of go out there and say that exactly. But if all things remain equal, no injuries or anything like that, yeah, you got to beat them by 21.
At least 3 touchdowns.
Yes.
But what would be an acceptable number for like Vandy
for
to
Vandy
get
to score?
Yeah.
I don't know, 17.
Because 3 touchdowns, like you could win 62-41, but you're like, wait a second. We gave up 41 points to Vandy?
We don't want that.
Right.
Keep them under 20.
Okay. All right. And so Georgia in the 40s and Vanderbilt at the most in the teens.
Yeah, teens.
All right. I think I could tolerate that too.
Mid-teens. So that's what's on deck for Georgia. And yeah, we'll go heavy LSU next week. We'll probably record a little earlier in the week, too, if that works for you, because I will not be here on Friday, as I will be driving to New Orleans on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Okay,
yeah.
So we can go ahead and knock that out a little earlier next week. But as we transition now, we talked about Alabama for a minute. I wanted to talk about them because Nick Saban came out the other day. I think this was on Wednesday, and he was being interviewed by the media or whatever. And he's talking about the attendance, and he said he's basically blasting Alabama students, saying that they're not coming and that the players deserve better and that it should be on a first-come, first-served basis, and if the students aren't going to come, then you take certain tickets. All this stuff that Nick Saban's talking about. But it's funny to me because, at one point in the interview, he goes, I've never talked about this, so. And then, 15 seconds later, he's like, well, maybe I talk about this too much. So it's like, well, which one is it?
Because he has talked about it before.
No, he's definitely talked about it before. And so for him to say, I don't ever talk about this, it's like, dude, you're lying.
Yeah.
And then he corrects himself.
At least I'll give him, he caught himself in the lie and corrected
he's
himself.
He's like, oh, I never talk about this.
He's
well, maybe
like
I
Urban
talk
Meyer.
About it too much. But anyway, it's so funny because he says something like that, like blaming the students or fans for not coming. And then you hear him say something like, I think we should go to 9 or 10 conference games and then have 2 big-time opponents outside of the conference. It's like, well, here's the thing. If you want people to stay and, come to these games, don't schedule Louisiana Lafayette. You're Alabama. You're favored in these games by 30-plus points regularly. It's like, why would you go spend – look, Tuscaloosa's just as hot as Athens, Georgia. Why would you go spend all that time – in a flaming hot stadium when your team's up 30 points. And they were up 49-0 at halftime. Still didn't cover, by the way, because they only scored one more touchdown and they let Louisiana Lafayette score two more. But when you look at, like, Georgia, for example, halftime of this week, that stadium was almost deserted after halftime. I mean, you know, Georgia was up big. It was very hot. Not almost deserted, but a lot of people left at halftime. So it was just very interesting to see how that happened. Georgia Kirby obviously didn't say anything about it. But it's just when you're playing bad opponents or you're up big in games, it's just natural that people are going to leave. It's not like a bad thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it's they're hot and they're thirsty, I mean, what is the, are the beverages free there? No. I mean, you got to go pay for more, so you can go somewhere else and drink something that that doesn't cost as much. But
and it has alcohol in it because this is college football.
That also. But, you know, yes. I mean, schedule better games. The thing about Nick Saban right now is he doesn't have anything to bitch about with his team. So he's got to come up with other stuff because his team is just demolishing everybody every week.
Well, you remember a few weeks ago, I think after one of the games, he like kind of was joking with the media, which is a rarity. But he was like, hey, can y'all write something like about how we need to execute better or something? Because
yeah. Well, I did that. I obliged him before the Ole Miss game. He said he wanted to, you know, hey, say something negative about our team. And I did. I went, well, you know what? You're susceptible to your secondary sketchy. And I think teams can hurt you with big passes. And then they went out and beat Ole Miss 62-7. So
yeah, they needed it. So
yeah.
Brame says, you're welcome,
right.
Alabama.
I mean, I tried to find something negative to say about them, but didn't work out for me.
Well, that's the thing. There's not really a whole lot.
There isn't. There's nothing.
What are you going on
here?
Yeah,
there's nothing.
The only way that Alabama is beatable this year is if Tua Tagovailoa gets hurt.
Yep.
If he gets hurt and Hurts is back in at quarterback, yeah, they can be beaten because Hurts is not good at moving the ball up and down the field with efficiency.
And even then, there's only one team in the league that's capable of beating them,
Georgia.
And that's us.
Yeah, absolutely.
If two is hurt.
Yeah, maybe Auburn.
Well, their Auburn's all got to get their act together on offense.
Well, that's true. And then LSU, too. I think a lot of people are underselling LSU, which is why I'm starting to get more and more worried about that trip next week. But for now, I just think it's – if you're Alabama, it's like – no, you're not losing to anyone. And, like, Saban is trying to create all of this stuff. And I think, what was it? The only time they've had bulletin board material was week one when Bobby Petrino was like, yeah, we could beat them. It's like, no, you shouldn't have said that.
No. I mean, my God, Louisville is horrible. I mean, they're an underdog at home this week to Tech. That's how bad it's gotten for Louisville.
Yeah, I think it's like 4.5 right now, which is like, oh, my gosh.
But then it's also now when you start looking to it, like, well, here, what is Alabama's resume so far? I mean, they've beaten Louisville. They've beaten Ole Miss, right?
Yes.
And then they've beaten two other patsies. They beat Lou
A&M.
Lafayette. Oh, yeah, A&M. So, yeah, A&M's like the best team they've played, and they still beat them by, what, like 23?
Yeah, beat them like a drum. So that's the thing. If you're Nick Saban, I guess you have to try to create some sort of not controversy, but you've got to try to drum up something for people to talk about that isn't just blowing smoke up your team's butt, because that's what everybody has been doing.
Well, I would applaud, because last week that game kicked off at noon here, 11 a.m. Central Time, so if the students showed up at 11 a.m. for the Louisiana game, I'd applaud them for getting up to come to the beginning of the game and then been less mad at them if they decided, you know what, now I'm going to go home and finish sleeping.
Yeah, exactly.
It's 48-0.
Hey, man, it's hard on these kids nowadays. They're expected to go out and pound beers all night and be up and ready for the game.
And then get up for an 11 a.m. kick.
I was going to say, man, Nick Saban's just – I think he's being a little too demanding, Brain. What do you think?
He's got to yell at someone because he really can't yell at his players because I don't – I mean, they're not really doing anything wrong right now.
They're not. They are firing on all cylinders. So there's Alabama for you. And the Dogs, look, I'll just go ahead and say it. The Dogs in Alabama will be meeting up in December, barring some unforeseen circumstance, and we can, you know, talk about it then. Like you said, you don't have to play Alabama now. You got to play them later. So hopefully the Dogs are playing much better. I won't even say much better. Just more consistently and more fluid.
Well, yeah, and the big picture, too, or one of the big pictures on offense is at some point getting DeAndre Swift back to 100%. Who knows if that'll happen? I mean, he did finally admit he is dealing with, like, a groin injury.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked his best against Tennessee than he has all year, but he still is just lacking that that next gear, I think. And, you know, so, I mean, that would be one key part of that offense to have just completely firing at 100% to to help it even more. And again, with all that said, you know, with Georgia's offense, absent the non-offensive touchdowns that Georgia has this year, which are four, is averaging 38.4 points per game. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah, right? I mean, what's wrong with Georgia's offense? Well, I'm not saying that there's not some things that we, you know, Georgia could still be doing better on offense, but with what Georgia's been doing on offense, Georgia's averaging 38.4 points per game.
That's the thing. There's nothing wrong with Georgia's offense. It's just they could be doing some execution, you know, a little bit more consistently.
Yeah.
Or that I don't think that really made sense. Let me rephrase that. They could execute more consistently. How about
right.
that?
I mean, and again, right now DeAndre Swift is averaging less than 5 yards a carry. So, I mean, we're not even getting, like, the full potential of Swift right now and are still going for 38 points a game.
And I'll say this, to come to the defense of, you know, your Brian Harrians and your Elijah Holyfields, that I keep hearing people say this and various people that cover Georgia, it's like, Georgia's limited in the backfield, or like, you know, Georgia, you know, these guys aren't Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Well, no duh. Like, what kind of stupid criticism is that?
Yeah.
That's like somebody coming up to me and like a girl that I ask out on a date, and she looks at me and she goes, I don't know, you're not Brad Pitt. Well, no crap.
Yeah.
Of course I'm not Brad
Pitt.
Guess what?
Brad Pitt ain't going out with you, so I'm all you got.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like right now, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb ain't coming back. Their eligibility's exhausted.
Yeah.
So there's no reason in like being like, oh, Elijah Holyfield's not Sony Michel. Duh.
No.
Like he's still a very good back, and he's proven that over the start of the season.
Sony's up in New England now running through all those holes created by holds by the Patriots offense.
Yeah, not he might be running
Dolphins
past holds,
fan.
But I don't know if you saw one of those Nick Chubb runs where he started in one hole, realized that like the offensive line blocked the wrong hole, and he just completely switched gears, broke like three tackles, and took it to the end zone. So Nick Chubb is doing all he can to help the Browns out.
Yeah, for his whopping three carries.
I think he'll be getting more. Carlos Hyde got like 22 carries for like 80-something yards, and Nick Chubb got three for 105.
I know. I mean, I don't know what Cleveland's doing right now. But
that's just a 35 yards per carry average.
That's
no
it.
Big deal.
Yeah, and then two out of the three were for touchdowns.
I think he'll be getting more carries as we go along. All right, before we wrap up here, we'll hit the Falcons for a second, then we'll jump to the Braves. We don't want to go too specific on the Braves because we're recording this on a day where they play tonight, and it won't be published until tomorrow. So we will kind of just be broad with them. But on the Falcons, another injury, man. Grady Jarrett not going to play this weekend in Pittsburgh against the Steelers. I mean, you're going to have to start, I don't know, just calling guys from the streets or something to be like, hey, can you come play offensive line? Or can you, I'm not offensive line, can you come play defensive line for us? Although they do have a big offensive line injury with Andy Levitre. But right now, this team, I mean, the past three games, Matt Ryan's been on 2016 MVP-level play. He's been unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's a shame because just as soon as the Falcons did get the offense worked out and figured out again, now the defense has just been, you know, wrecked by injuries and
I'm
can't
still
stop anybody.
Livid with this team for letting the Panthers sign Eric Reed. You can't tell me that you didn't need that player because both of your starting safeties are out. The Panthers don't have both of their starting safeties out, and yet they signed a player that they think could come in and help. So if it's all about, you know, winning and you know, all of this off-the-field activism, whatever crap aside, that guy could have helped your team out because you're down two starting safeties. And instead, you're going to roll with KZ and I don't even know who else you're throwing out there, but you're getting victimized. I mean, you've gotten victimized over the top the last 2 weeks. AJ Green carved you up this past week, and Drew Brees threw all over you the week before. And it's like, oh, our biggest weakness is pass defense right now. Well, yeah, because both of your starting safeties are out, and you're just going to let the best free agent safety on the market go sign with a division rival.
And now you got to go to Pittsburgh with Antonio Brown. Juju Smith-Schuster is having a huge year so far in Big Ben, and the Falcons are basically, and the Steelers are a desperate team too because they're sitting there with just one win.
Well, it's another shootout type game because the Steelers' defense ain't any good either.
No, but Atlanta's about to be 1-4.
Oh, I agree. I don't think they can win just because, look, they don't have anything on defense. And now that Grady Jarrett's out, James Conner is going to be running all over the Falcons, it would seem.
Yeah,
like.
And And Jarrett, too, I think is, I mean, he's out for this game, but the early reports are he's going to miss a couple of games, too. Like, he could be out two or three, so.
And that's one of the best young defensive tackles in the NFL.
Right, now you've got two. It's a key injury at every level. There's a defensive lineman out. Deion Jones is out. You got the two guys in the secondary that are out, mm-hmm. so. Boy, I mean, it's bad. It's such terrible luck, too, because Atlanta had started to really, I mean, the end of last year, and even that first game against the Eagles this year, the Falcons had suddenly put together like a real formidable defense. Mm-hmm. And with the way the offense is humming right now, you know, they would have been meeting, I think, the expectations we all had for the team this year. But unfortunately, those injuries are just too much to overcome.
I think with a fully healthy defense and the offense playing the way it is right now, Super Bowl contender 100%. There's no question about that. The problem is you just don't have the defense now. And Matt Ryan is the first quarterback in NFL history, these are the last 2 weeks, to throw for 350 yards, three touchdowns, and no interceptions, and lose both games.
Yeah. No, I mean, if it wasn't for the defensive injuries, I mean, the Falcons would look like the Rams right now.
They would.
They would have the, I mean, no holes, just an elite offense and an elite defense. And that's what LA has.
Yeah. And if the Falcons are going to salvage anything, if they can somehow hold on, they have to start winning football games. And that starts this weekend. It's very tough to see a path to the playoffs for them right now.
Well, no. And I mean, this is a franchise, too, that just historically has never fared well when they've had to go up to, like, the North.
Pittsburgh, Philly,
New York, even playing at the Giants and those places. So, I don't think Atlanta has any shot of winning. And, that's against a Steelers team that hadn't looked great so far this year either.
Yeah, and that doesn't just have problems on the field. They got problems off the field with Le'Veon Bell and even Antonio Brown kind of showing some diva attitude the past few weeks.
Well, he's a wide receiver.
Certainly. But hopefully for the Falcons' sake, they're able to get a win this weekend. I'm not calling for that, but it's really tough to watch this team just because you know what they could be, and then the injuries have just taken everything away.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. I mean, to me, it's just you got an excuse for it with the injuries, but, I mean, this, you know, I think the ceiling now for this team is only like 8-8, 9-7, something like that.
Don't give me this crap that you're trying to compete, though, and you let your division rival sign Eric Reed, and you don't go sign.
Yeah, they don't do anything.
That was just really stupid. All right, last but not least, here on the crossover on 960theref.com, Braves start playoffs action tonight. Again, we're recording this on Thursday. It'll be released on Friday. So whether they're down 1-0 or up 1-0, it's obviously going to change some things, but just kind of big picture talking about this. I mean, this is the first time the Braves have been in the playoffs since 2013. I mentioned this earlier. When they play game one, it will be 5 years to the day of their last playoff win, and that was against the Dodgers. So hopefully the Braves can take care of business coming up this series. And I think at this point, it is sort of like playing with house money because we didn't think the Braves would be here at this point. I know Dansby Swanson probably not going to be active in the NLDS if the Braves beat the Dodgers. Hopefully he'll be ready to go for an NLCS. But, I mean, this team has just been so fun to watch all season long, and MLB just came out with this postseason marketing campaign basically crapping on all the old guard and all the keyboard artists that talk about baseball. They're basically saying, let the kids play. Let them bat flip. Let them do all this stuff. Because baseball realizes they've got an issue. And if they seem curmudgeonly and old school too much, kids aren't going to pay attention. And you realize now you've got all these great young players in the league. I mean, Ronald Acuna could be one of the stars of the postseason if he plays well.
Yeah, Acuna, Albies, the Braves are like leading the charge with those young guys too. So
the Yankees have an Aaron Judge, you know, that's another guy. So I mean, yeah, there's a lot of good young players that play with emotion. Oh my gosh, don't play with emotion. That's against the rules.
Well, that mean baseball probably needs to. And yeah, there are some of the old curmudgeons that are still in the broadcast booth for some of these games. But baseball probably needs to talk to its pitchers too like, hey, listen, maybe don't bean them after they get excited if they hit a home run off.
Well, that's the thing. I always say this. If you don't want a guy to bat flip, here's an idea. Don't let him hit a home run.
Yeah, I mean, like the pitchers, they get a big strikeout. You know, they're pumping their glove and they're yelling when they're coming off the mound. So
it was complete chicken crap, too, that Urania hit Acuna. I mean, I know we're going back a few months, but a guy hits a leadoff homer three straight games. So what do? You act like cowards and you're like, oh, well, hey, we're not going to let him hit a home run on us. We better hit him. Yeah. And then Keith Hernandez going and saying what he says.
Yeah, got to hit him.
What's the thing? You said this around the time that this happened, and I totally agree with you. why does baseball keep employing all these people that hate baseball?
I know, that's what they sound like in the booth. It's like they don't like baseball.
Like Joe Simpson, he's another one.
When Joe Simpson, I hate to say it, Don Sutton is the same way.
When Joe Simpson went off on Chase Utley for wearing a T-shirt in warm-ups, I about wanted to rip my ears out.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you joking? It's a T-shirt, and it's warm-ups. And he's like, I was in the Dodgers organization. They used to not stand for these kind of things. Dude, shut up.
Yeah, well, now they don't care.
No.
Yeah.
So it's a T-shirt.
It was like it was about 100 degrees with humidity of 70%.
And it was like a T-shirt that like represented his like Chase Utley's charity or something.
Yeah. And so, it was summertime in Georgia.
It's like, what the hell's wrong with you?
I take BP in like shorts and flip-flops.
And so I, for one, am very glad that Major League Baseball is changing their marketing to where they're like, maybe we should embrace excitement and the kids and let all this unwritten rules crap fly out the window.
Yeah. The as far as the Braves and Dodgers go, look, with the playoffs, and the Braves are a good example of it from the 90s and all the disappointments that they had in the 90s. Mm-hmm. The playoffs are a crapshoot. It's about getting to the dance. To me, Atlanta's got just as good a shot as anyone in the National League. But the Dodgers have eight guys who have hit 20 or more homers. They definitely have, I mean, a deeper bullpen and a better bullpen. I mean, they're the favorites in the series, no doubt. But it's not to say the Braves have no shot of winning.
And I'll say this. The Braves are flying under the radar here because they're playing the Dodgers. So it's L.A. There's going to be all these storylines of what postseason Kershaw are we going to get? And can the Dodgers finally get over the hump and win the World Series and all this stuff? And it's like, the Braves, nobody's really talking about them going into this series. So I think that aspect of it, maybe the Braves can kind of catch the Dodgers by surprise.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think they've got a crack at them. But, you know, they've got to, the first two games are in L.A., so they got to deal with that. Not that I don't think it matters, because, again, Atlanta lost 3 out of 4 to the Dodgers in Atlanta this year. Mm-hmm. And even looking at the other series between, I guess they beat the Brewers, but then lost. They got swept at home in a 4-game series by the Rockies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like SunTrust Park has been, like a huge home field advantage. Yeah,
but hopefully Ronald Acuna again introduces himself to a whole new fan base now that we're in the playoffs, and his star shines bright, because that would be great to see. And hopefully next week when we reconvene, we're talking about the Braves still playing baseball.
Yeah, but I mean, by the time we record this next week, the series will be over, right? One way or another.
Well, if we record on Tuesday, which is kind of what I was going to shoot your way, so there might be a game 5 that day.
Yeah.
Maybe we can record on Wednesday. That might make sense, too. But either way, we'll figure that out. And again, hopefully the Braves still in action when we reconvene. All right, Brian, that'll wrap things up for us here on The Crossover. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will indeed be back next week with another episode right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brain on 960theref.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.